As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. And after what felt like a step forward against Chelsea, we took a step back and more, I think, against Bournemouth. But we're here and we're going to go through it, of course, like we always do. We've got a full house for some reason. I thought someone might have dodged it and came up with some sort of excuse. But no, everyone is dressed in black, ironically, and they want to get their teeth into what was a pretty disastrous day for Manchester United on Saturday. But there's only one place to start. First question comes in to Andy from Drew in New Jersey. Andy, what type of cheese best describes Manchester United's performance?
Because of Lawrie Whitwell, I had probably 50 different people come up to me outside Old Trafford yesterday. I had enough on my plate as it was because it was raining. I was selling the magazine, asking me about cheese. I went for a drink on Friday night with two of my friends. The first thing they said to me was, our eldest lad wants to tell him to ask Andy Mitt about cheese. I mean, no one even calls me that. And people coming up to me yesterday asking me about bleeding cheese. Right, what's your question again? Describe the result as cheese.
Yes. Describe the result in a cheese, yeah, roughly.
Yeah, Camembert, because it stank.
Oh.
Camembert.
Nice.
Is that a...
Yeah, it's a French cheese, isn't it?
Camembert famous... is, yeah. I don't know where Camembert's come from, but well, Manchester City fans, perhaps that's the type of cheese that they eat, possibly.
Yeah, that's because you're from Oldham and you can't pronounce these sophisticated things, but carry on.
Laurie, Carl, do you want to have a go at describing that performance in a cheese? It definitely stunk, yeah.
Edam, loads of holes in it.
Is that Dutch as well? Very topical.
Dutch, yeah, fits, yeah.
I do love cheese. I do. I mean,
well, Andy, you put a picture of the cheese that you had on Saturday, and you try to claim that you were eating it for luck. So obviously, that's a horrendous ritual that will never last beyond another 90 minutes.
Correct.
But you sent a picture. It looks like the orange segment that you get for answering a question right on Trivial Pursuit in the leisure and sport category. It looks like it's going to chip your teeth in. What's that?
Well, blame Joel Glazer, not me. All I do is turn up, work, and take whatever food is on offer. I have a nice coffee, some of the staff in the press room, belting people. But yeah, in hindsight, looking at that cheese, which I took because I thought, if I start eating cheese at every match and we keep doing what we did against Chelsea, then we're on to something here. You could just eat cheese all the way through. Clearly, it didn't work because the performance absolutely stank. But yeah. There's an answer to your question, Mr. Journalist.
Okay. Well, the cheese was crap. The match was crap. Laurie, how bad was it? I mean, Andy's been asked to write a piece about the worst results at Old Trafford in Manchester United's Premier League history. There's a piece up on The Athletic, which if you really feel like doing it, and you can go over every single one of those, all 10. There's even slightly more than 10 because he's paired a few in there as well. Bad as it gets, isn't it?
I thought we were just going to filibuster this whole podcast with talk about cheese, so do we actually have to get onto the football now? Okay. I tweeted it full time that it ranked among the, you know, the worst results in post-Fergie history. And a lot of people were like, you're sensationalising it. You're going way too far there. But to lose 3-0 at home to Bournemouth, and it could have been more, you know, clearly, and they actually scored a fourth, and, you know, this handball rule sort of saves United blushes on this occasion, you know, minimally, I suppose.
I don't think it did, really, but yeah, okay. Let's go with it.
I don't know, 4-0 at home, I don't know, for some reason, 3-0, okay, it's horrendous, but 4-0 is a total embarrassment.
It's the first time United have lost by 3-plus goals to a team starting in the bottom half in a Premier League fixture at home ever.
That's a lot of caveats to get that stat together, I must say.
I did it, didn't I? I've been practicing.
We did say Bournemouth were a good team, though, didn't we? You know, Solanke, good striker.
This brings the end, Solanke, you know, Andy can no longer make any Bournemouth jokes on this podcast again because they've just dropped three on our heads at home.
But I mean, Dominic Solanke is a centre forward that, you know, I'm going to go there. United would, he wouldn't be out of place playing for United. It'd improve United's team.
That's clearly damning.
You're wincing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's really damning of Manchester United, because Dominic Solanke, you know, I'll let's wheel it back a little bit. It's taken him a while to figure out how to be a proper Premier League football player. There was times at Liverpool and a couple of years at Bournemouth where it looked like he was nowhere near the level, and he seems to finally put it together. But United should not be looking at players like Dominic Solanke's quality.
What? No, we can't be longing for Dominic Solanke.
I'm not saying longing. And just to let listeners in on a little...
Dominic Solanke would improve United right now. Absolutely. The fact that he would is damning to all the current strikers at Manchester United.
And what about the defenders? Yeah. Because Dominic Solanke bullied that Manchester United defence yesterday. That's how good he was.
Absolutely.
In terms of the actual result and the performance, it was so disheartening because it had come off, you know, the back of the Chelsea win, which felt like, you know, again, United kind of pulling it together. But I mean, Critch, our mate, the piece that he wrote off the back of the game sort of encapsulated it perfectly by saying, you know, United feel like they've turned so many corners, they're going around in circles. We're at that point again in a managerial reign. And I suppose that's why it's so deflating, because you just feel like it's just going to keep happening. This kind of level where they tried. United certainly rallied a bit in the second half, didn't they? Where they, you know, they were kind of getting men in the box and you know, having the ball a little bit in Bournemouth's territory. But Bournemouth just looked like the more accomplished team when they got it on the ball. Yeah, it looked like a frantic kind of hopeful kind of football from United, whereas Bournemouth had a strategy. And as Carl said about Dominic Solanke, I think that's also really damning.
Andy, I tried to ask Bruno Fernandes after the game, you know, the commitment and the intensity of the Chelsea performance was what stood out in the week with what was supposed to be, you know, a team that Erik ten Hag had picked to fully trust and to fully back and to move forward with. But Bournemouth was the opposite, wasn't it? And I tried to ask him why, and he couldn't really answer it.
We tried to ask the manager the same thing. Why is this team so inconsistent? And it's because they're not good enough. And we go from the low of Newcastle last week, where our mood's on the floor, really, really poor performance, to the high of Chelsea midweek, where we're near euphoric because most of the team played well. The players are getting sevens and eights, nines, and then it drops right down. I was stunned by that result because for all their faults, Manchester United are pretty efficient at beating teams below them in the league. And that didn't look like happening from the first minute yesterday. It was one of them where, right from the start, I thought, Bournemouth are on this. I knew, and we spoke on the last podcast about how informed they are. You know that they're going to press high. But if we know that, it's up to Manchester United to find a solution at home. Conditions were awful. I didn't even know you were there, Ian. Were you sat right down by the pitch?
Yeah, got soaked.
Yeah, I was going to say. It was awful, wasn't it? And it was a stinker of a result. It was, we've had lots of others this season, and the whole team played poorly. I think who was the best of a bad bunch? Harry Maguire in the first half. You're looking for leaders, you're looking for good performances. Up front, absolutely nothing, despite all of that possession. Very few chances created. Bournemouth were just hitting long balls in, winning them in the air, cutting through the midfield once again. We keep seeing this rinse and repeat pattern, and coming outside the ground yesterday, you know, people were criticising, not unfairly, the players, the manager. Is this just going to go on all season? And does this season just end with Manchester United being sixth?
It feels like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I don't see how it changes, because every time you feel like they've got a new foothold and they've got a new platform or new result or new selection or system, whatever it might be, to build on, it then almost disappears as quick as it came. So I don't see how the cycle breaks at the moment, really. I mean, Casemiro's on the grass again training. United have issued that update, which is obviously, you know, good news to have him back. Martinez is still a little bit away, but I can't even see those two returning and changing things completely, Kyle, can you?
No, not particularly. The fundamental problems are the same, right? There's a dearth of players that are comfortable in the first and second phase playing out the fresh. So, you know, you want to build out the back, but you pass to your back four and there's not too many players that are comfortable receiving the ball when they're being pressed. You want to pass into midfield. The best midfielder playing out the press right now is an 18-year-old who's barely played any minutes. So you saw it, what Bournemouth did from minute one. They just went kick long, press deep, and eventually they're going to cough the ball up. And also press really hard in central midfield, because one of McTominay or Amrabat will cough the ball up. This is how two of their goals come about, because McTominay gets caught. He's, you know, he's not great turning on the pressure, and there's done. I'm writing a review of 2023 for The Athletic. This will go out sometime, probably between Christmas and New Year. And I found a little factoid, which is in the post-Ferguson years, Manchester United have finished with more than 70 points on three occasions. In the seasons after they finished with more than 70 points, they finished sixth.
Every single time?
So 17-18... finished with more than 70 points. 2021, with Anderoli, finished with more than 70 points. That season was finished by the Ragnik season. And then last season, finished with more than 70 points. So Manchester United is sixth right now. I'm pulling the face, you know, listeners right now. Do you think Manchester United are going to finish higher than sixth place in the league? Do you think Manchester United are capable of finishing higher than sixth place in the league right now? It's a very odd quirk of boom and bust of this Manchester United team. Every time they have a good season, you think this is it. They're going to start being a proper top four team. They can start getting the Champions League quarterfinals.
Is that to do we think, with players easing off because they're in the Champions League and we know how much of a factor that is in their salaries? Is it to do with the Glazer spending, which we, you know, you can chart, it does kind of taper off when they've made it into the Champions League places? It's difficult to pinpoint, I suppose. The one aspect of this team, I would say, is that it's so brittle. But you look at that 11 that was selected, and it's a left-back who was brought in on emergency loan. It's a right-back who was signed years ago, who was sent out on loan, who were kind of not really sure about any point. It's a sort of left-back playing central defence, because he's a left-footer and, you know, he's, you know, what Ten Hag prefers in that situation. A guy that was, you know, could have gone to West Ham in the summer. It's all sort of temporary fixes. You know, in midfield, you've got somebody who was signed on loan for a 10 million loan fee with only an option rather than an obligation, because United clearly aren't that sure about making it a permanent deal when the summer comes. Another midfielder who, you know, could have gone in the summer, you know, offers were entertained. And then you get to the striker who has been available, you know, probably for transfer in the last 3 or 4 years, and, you know, clearly is just not up to it. So it feels like such a temporary team. So are you surprised by that kind of performance, really?
Yeah, Laurie's absolutely right. I had a look at the spending Manchester United do in the summer windows after they qualify for the Champions League, and Laurie's correct. It does take a hit in that you've got a Glazer ownership that will spend or allow money to be spent to get Manchester United in the Champions League. But once they're in there, they're like, okay, you'll be fine. Not realising that, you know, in the Premier League at this point in time, you've got a sprint to stand in place. I looked at that, you know, we were very excited at that summer transfer that we said, oh, Onana, that's a Ten Hag style of player. Oh, Amrabat, he knows Amrabat, he's going to be able to work. And yet it's not coalesced. The foundations that were so good about United last year have fallen apart, and that's made a lot of these newer signings come in. They've not been able to show their best, or I can't make a case for any of Onana, Højlund, Amrabat, Reguilón doing really well. I spoke about Reguilón being really good in the second half against Chelsea, and I'm watching him against Bournemouth. I'm going, what happened?
He was dreadful. He had a really poor game. He was one of the worst, and you don't wish it on anyone, but your job is to, you know, you're allowed to form your own opinion watching it. So how do we get out of this? You say last season, the best four players last season, you could say, were Martinez, maybe Varane, Casemiro, Rashford, they're not featuring. Casemiro's back on the grass, you were saying. We started this season looking like he was on the grass, so hopefully we'll come back and we'll see the last Casemiro from last season playing well, because he's a great player. I don't buy this line that his legs have just gone, but the people telling me that are professionals in football. I just can't see that you get to June and go, right, I'm finished as a player.
It's got to be a system thing, that, hasn't it? Because even if you own him and his legs have gone, even if you run with that theory, then if you know that, then surely there's a system at play where you still can get the best out of Casemiro now, this version of Casemiro, whether that's playing him, you know, alongside a Mainu or playing him alongside even an Amrabat. You know, there's surely a way to still get something out of him rather than just stick him in a position and say, well, his legs have gone, so that's what the problem is.
It was hoped that Amrabat would come in and be either Casemiro's deputy or be able to do some of the running next to Casemiro. And that hasn't worked because Casemiro's been injured. A bit like when Sabitzer came in January. The hope was he would be able to help stabilise things when Eriksen was gone, and then Casemiro just wasn't there. So we never saw if Sabitzer could do the job for Man United. But you're totally right. Even if Casemiro's legs have gone, there should be a way to get a lot out of Casemiro, even in a diminished physical capacity. Now, he didn't play against Bournemouth, so we can't comment too much. I think one thing that is getting really concerning, and Laurie's touched upon this, is you've got Luke Shaw, a left back, you know, your best left back, playing at left centre back because you're so insistent on having a left footer for angles and orientation, as Ten Hag likes to talk about. And if that is the case, you need to have, surely the players need to be drilled really, really hard on what this left-footed structure is.
Because it's such a compromise to take him away from left-back when you've got available centre-backs.
I've written it three or four times, then Hag's explained it. He wants left-footers at left centre-back, and he wants left-footers on left side of the field because he wants passing orientations there, and he wants to be able to build from back and pass well there. And then you saw Bournemouth, just a fairly well-organised and energetic press, and whatever plan and whatever orientation you talk about just goes to dust. And that's the problem, is that for all of the things Ten Hag says and all the things that, you know, all the things you can write about and say, well, Ten Hag wants to play football this way, we're not seeing it. And also, it seems to be easily compatible. Bournemouth went, okay, fine. If you wanna do your passing rotation on the left hand side, we'll just put one man there and one man there, and you try playing out of that, and you can't because you're not well drilled enough in it, or you can't do it to the level that a team that wants to be in the top four wants to.
Can we just drill down then on a couple of the selections that Ten Hag made, both in the starting lineup and the changes that he made in game as well? First of all, in the starting lineup, Laurie, why do you think Rasmus Højlund didn't start? And if it wasn't him starting, why do you think it was Anthony Martial and maybe not even Marcus Rashford, possibly, who obviously has played that role previously under Ten Hag?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting thing to delve into. The Højlund thing, is he capable of playing three games a week? You know, he came in with this back injury. He's obviously been used in a way that he's not been run into the ground, I don't think. You know, he's not been playing 90 minutes every single time he's featuring. He also had a more recent injury, didn't he? And so I think Ten Hag has felt that he has to bring him back in gradually. And
it's a hamstring as well, wasn't it? Which obviously, you know, can be a load issue, can't it? Yeah. If he's not used to it.
Yeah, and obviously Tuesday, Bayern Munich, Sunday, Liverpool, you've got two big games coming up. You're hoping that at home to Bournemouth, Anthony Martial can, you know, pull a kind of performance like he did at Goodison out of the bag and do okay. Clearly, Ten Hag, in an ideal world, wouldn't be starting Martial, I don't think. You know, he would want another striker in there that he could rely on consistently, but I think he felt that he got a decent tune out of him at Goodison, which was, against a team that, okay, not as perhaps organised as Bournemouth in their press, but you know that they have that in them, and he did well there. So I think Ten Hag probably basing it on that. You're exactly right in that, could Marcus Rashford not have played up front? So I think that's an interesting thing to kind of ponder. I don't know if he felt that, well, Rashford's my guy off the left, and I kind of want to make sure that when he comes back in, he is going to be in his preferred position. I don't want to confuse things too much more.
Can you see that happening? Because at the minute, it feels like Garnacho is almost the only guaranteed selection in that front line.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, maybe he changes it for the next time that, you know, maybe Rashford does start centre forward instead of Martial next time. I mean, I don't know, but I mean...
He also was ill, I think, as well. He'd missed training on Friday, Rashford.
Yeah, there is that, to be fair.
That's a key consideration.
Yeah. That is a key point, yeah. But, I mean, but still, he could have come on earlier.
Yeah, and Ten Hag before the game was absolutely unequivocal that Martial deserved his chance. That's what he said. He said, Anthony Martial deserves to start. He deserves his chance. Rasmus Højlund's played a lot of games. We've got many games coming up. He's not used to playing three games every week. That's more or less verbatim what Ten Hag said.
I've written a piece on the Marcus Rashford situation that kind of tries to address some aspects to it. We can't go into everything, but the way that, you know, he kind of wears his emotions quite clearly. You know, he is quite moody around Carrington when United aren't winning, and clearly that is happening more often than not. So does Ten Hag feel like it's getting too much for him? You know, he clearly, you know, feels a lot for the club given he's come through the academy, and does Ten Hag think, well, the better choice here is just to kind of take him out the firing line a bit and kind of, I don't know, let himself get his head clear if that's an issue. But yeah, I mean, I think clearly for someone who was absolutely essential to United doing well last season, you know, scored a career best 30 goals, clearly he needed to be out of the team because he wasn't performing at the required standard. But then starting Martial over him, even though it's not his preferred position, I think does raise a question mark at least.
I thought it was interesting, the reaction to Marcus Rashford coming on. It was very muted at Old Trafford when he replaced Garnacho, and that's a good barometer of how Manchester United fans are feeling about Marcus Rashford right now. Anthony Martial, yeah, I get the reason for saying he deserves his chance. I watched him as he walked onto the pitch. He was praying, but those prayers weren't answered. He didn't get much service at all. Bournemouth did a number on United, to be honest. And he was the first to come off. Again, it's like, get off the pitch. And there were just no performers yesterday. I thought it was a tough afternoon for Garnacho, but I thought Adam Smith, who was up against, he's been around, he knows his stuff, but a lot of poor touches from Garnacho. But then he does a moment of brilliance. He turned and ran towards goal 20 minutes into the second half. And you're just hoping that one of these moments can produce an equaliser. But it didn't feel like that was ever going to happen against Bournemouth. Once he got that lead, they were too well organised. And there's another point here, and it's an uncomfortable truth, but it's one Erik ten Hag makes a lot. The rest are getting better. The rest are richer. The rest can buy top players from around the world. It's not really an excuse, because Manchester United should be better and all the top teams need to compete with stronger opponents as well. But I remember years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, Bournemouth beating AC Milan to somebody and thinking that would be unheard of at any other point in football. But financially, every Premier League team now can bring in decent players. And as we saw with Bournemouth's manager, he's a top manager. He's going places. And what I said to him after the game was, wasn't a one-off for him. He was the captain of the Athletic Club side who won emphatically at Old Trafford in 2012. And I said, you know, did that lead into you talking to your players before the match? And he said, no.
I mean, I think it's really illuminating with the discussion about Martial, in that, okay, Højlund cannot play three games a week. Last season, Ten Hag was telling us Martial can't play three games a week. And this was before the Manchester derby, where he properly broke himself and now seems completely unable to sprint. Manchester United's front four has a teenager in Garnacho. You've got a 20-year-old in Højlund who's dealing with a stress fracture and some sort of hamstring injury, so therefore can't play 390 minutes a week. The backup striker is Anthony Martial, who is probably going to leave on a free. I know United can activate that additional year, but I'm going to assume they're not going to do that, considering his physical condition. You've also got Anthony, who has been unconvincing for large swathes of this season, and a lot of defenders have figured out how to defend him. You've got Marcus Rashford, who is preferred on the left, but can do a job at centre forward. I think it's interesting that even at this point in time, Ten Hag prefers Martial to Rashford up front, because Martial's better with his back towards goal. You know, Martial is better at making those long balls stick. He's got a better first touch. He can't sprint and chase his own 1-2s anymore, but he can do that better than Rashford. So you've got a front four of players who are too young, players who can't play three times a week, players who are out of form. So that creates an extra additional problem on your midfield. And this is probably why Ten Hag has done so much around making sure Scott McTominay can get in the penalty area. But also, when you do that, you leave your midfield completely open because McTominay's in the other penalty area, not by the centre circle where he's needed. And Iriola was speaking, I believe, in the press conference. He said, we knew Bournemouth would get chances in the transition. So Manchester United right now are a very expensive team that has a bunch of players that can't really score for various reasons. They are, in order to try and get a goal, they're trying to get McTominay in the box. But when you leave McTominay in the box, that leaves loads of space open in midfield. And also in midfield and defence, if you press them really high, you can win the ball. So, yeah, it's no coincidence that a team like Bournemouth that just has a pretty good, pretty to the point plan can 3-0 you.
I was just looking at Højlund's stats. He's only played 90 minutes on four occasions this season so far. And he has done sort of three games in a week, but usually there's been, you know, a kind of substitution on the hour mark or something. So it's clearly something that is being managed.
Yeah.
And he's a 20-year-old new to the league. You know, I think I said this before, like he shouldn't really be the guy that you are depending on week after week, game after game. But because he was bought for, you know, a lot of money, you know, an inflated fee, you know, let's have it right. The kind of focus is then on him, but it shouldn't be that way.
An inflated fee, asterisk, cheaper wages than Harry Kane.
Yeah, yeah.
The last time I said this, it was about a player, it was about Jadon Sancho, so please forgive me. I think Højlund's going to have a good Manchester United career. I did say that about Sancho. I think there's too much talent in there. I think his physical traits are great. I think his match awareness is great. And I think he will come good one day. It's really difficult to know when that's going to kick in. And the problem with Man United is they need him to be good 2 months ago.
His mentality seems good as well, doesn't it, Carl? I think to sort of echo your point there and give hope for the future, he seems like a guy that's pretty strong-willed.
Okay, last point on the Bournemouth game, Andy. Rafael Varane was back in the squad after a back injury, but when Ten Hag had to bring a centre-back on, it was Johnny Evans and not Rafael Varane who came onto the pitch. Does Rafael Varane still have a place in this Manchester United squad moving forward, or is he the sixth, seventh choice centre-back, that's it, and January looks like an opportunity to leave?
I don't know what will happen in January. I don't think, given Ten Hag said we don't plan to bring players in, that he'd happily offload players and weaken his squad, although he may be pushed to do that. Varane, for me, nothing's changed since when I said before the Fulham game that I didn't expect him to play. Something's clearly gone on there. And the manager is going with the players who he trusts. And he could argue that quite strongly against Chelsea. And he could argue it less strongly after that performance against Bournemouth. It's pretty sad when he's fit and playing well. Rafael Varane is one of the best defenders in the world and we're just not seeing it this season. I don't know how it ends up playing out.
Right, OK, well, if you want to read any more about Manchester United's humbling defeat to Bournemouth, their first ever home defeat in the history of the club to Bournemouth, then you know what to do. There's lots of articles on The Athletic, including Andy's rundown of the 10 worst ever Manchester United Old Trafford defeats in the Premier League.
You didn't have to write that article. I had to wake up this morning at 7 o'clock because my editor was on my case to write that article. And I'm like comparing, oh, which was worse? Was it Norwich at home under Van Gaal? Or was it Sheffield United or Burnley? And I'm trawling back and, oh, Liverpool 5-0. Well, what did you put in as number one? Where'd you put Bournemouth? Fortunately, I spoke to some esteemed academics at Yale University in America and we managed to get an exact formula. So all the answers are there. It's facts. It's not subjective at all. Do not disagree with any of them in the comments section. Thank you.
Yeah, I echo that as well. Remember, if you want to get involved with that and you're not a subscriber, we've got a special offer on at the moment. You can sign up to The Athletic for a year for a friend or an enemy with a special discounted price of £19.99. Go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Well, luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Okay, well, if we thought, you know, taking on Bournemouth was a difficult task at the weekend, we've got the small matter now of the mighty Bayern Munich coming to Manchester. United need to win to have any hope of continuing in the Champions League into the new year. But they just got beat 5-1, didn't they? So it should be fine, yeah. Carl, shouldn't it?
Fan dabby dozy. No worries. Nothing like Bayern responding really well after defeat. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. I'm going and I'm not going to get stressed out.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
I'm going to be as zen as possible. I'm also going to bring the biggest bag of Maltesers so Andy doesn't have to struggle with cheese anymore.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
I don't think the fans should be zen. I think you should make an absolute racket against Bayern because this team need the support. And against Bournemouth, you had a small pocket of the TRA next to the Bournemouth fans doing the best. Old Trafford needs to do a lot, lot better. Bayern made a racket when United visited in September. Copenhagen did as well. Galatasaray famously did. It's about all the time Old Trafford turned up for a big European game. It's a huge match. There's so many different permutations to this against one of the best teams in the world. And just look at the names in that Bayern Munich side and think, how on earth did they lose 5-1 against Eintracht Frankfurt at the weekend? And you've seen players like Jamal Musiala coming off the bench. He was brilliant against United in Munich. Harry Kane, Coman, Kimmich, Goretzka, Davis, Upamecano, Manuel Neuer. Just look at their bench. Thomas Muller, Serge Gnabry. Come on, United. Pull it out from somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know where they're going to pull it out from, but they need to. There's no doubt about that. And Gnabry's out with a groin injury, so we know that we'll have to face him. He obviously scored in the 4-3 defeat over in Munich at the start of the group stage. Thomas Muller, Laurie, said that they want to use that 5-1 defeat to Frankfurt, which Rafa Honigstein has described as bad news for Manchester United in an article. Yet another glorious read for Reds to catch up on ahead of Tuesday's game. He said they're going to use the result as an engine of anger. Thomas Muller. I have no idea what that means, but it sounds ominous.
It sounds pretty scary, doesn't it? He's got away with words, hasn't he, Thomas Muller? I remember being at a press conference previously and he's a sharp guy. And I was just looking at the previous defeats that Bayern have had this season. And to Carl's point, yeah, they lost the Super Cup to Leipzig in the first match, went and beat Werder Bremen 4-0 the next game. Lost to Saarbrücken in the German Cup. And then
that was a disaster. They were like, are they third tier or something like that?
Yeah. Well, then they went and beat Borussia Dortmund 4-0 at the Westfalenstadion. So this is their third defeat of the season in all competitions. So if Bayern Munich continue that theme, then United will be losing 4-0 at Old Trafford. And I don't know what that says about the team and the situation of the club, but you never know. I mean, they do have this habit, as we just touched on, of, I don't know, having a spasm of unity and kind of togetherness. And I don't know, they might suddenly come together and think this is an occasion for us to try and really resurrect something. And I guess Bayern have looked a little bit shaky. And I know that, you know, that 5-1 sort of says it, but also even in Munich, you know, United did get at them. You know, they could create chances. Copenhagen in the last game over in Munich, you know, it was 0-0 and they had the chances as well. So, you know, Bayern haven't been too awesome in the Champions League this season.
They've got 13 points. Manchester United have got 4. I wouldn't mind being not too awesome if it meant having half the points that Bayern Munich have had this season.
Yeah. Let's spell out the permutations, Andy. You said before there are quite a few, and there are. So basically, for United to go through into the knockout stage of the Champions League, they need to beat Bayern and hope that FC Copenhagen and Galatasaray draw. There's a piece on The Athletic explaining this by Omar Garrick, which is interesting because he says there's been 18 previous instances since 2003-04 season of teams facing off on match day 6 while they've been level on points, which is exactly what Copenhagen and Galatasaray have done. And out of those 18 matches, only one of them has finished in a draw. So it seems pretty unlikely that that's going to happen this time around. But you never know. If Manchester United do beat Bayern and is a winner in the Copenhagen-Galatasaray game, it means that Manchester United go through to the Europa League and they'll have a playoff again like we had against Barcelona last year, where in the new year we'll take on one of the teams who finished runner-up in their Europa League group. Obviously, that will be finalised this week as well. If Manchester United draw, they can still qualify for the Europa League, but that then needs a Galatasaray win in the other match. That would mean that we are level on points with Copenhagen. The head-to-head record against them would cancel each other out, both in terms of results and goals. But United would then go through in third place in their Champions League group because of their overall goal difference in the group being better than Copenhagen. If Copenhagen were to win their game against Galatasaray and United draw, United are out of Europe. If United lose, they're out of Europe. Still following?
Yeah. I tell you what, it would be a massive failure if Manchester United go out of Europe. That would be, not even finishing in the top three, would be a huge failure. I'm more comfortable with going into this Europa League now. Play against FC Chicken and Chips or whatever, even if we miss out on the Real Madrid or the Barcelona, because this team is nowhere near good enough to be winning the Champions League. Get a confidence building, run in that Europa League, and it's much better for squad as well. I know that the coaching staff definitely feel that, but I also know the accountants at the club will be thinking keeping the Champions League because that's where the dough is.
Yeah, I guess, Laurie, the question is, for Manchester United's season, we sort of talked about this previously, but obviously quite a bit more water has passed under the bridge since the last time we asked this question. Would it be a good thing for United to have extra matches in the new year and Thursday night trips and all that sort of stuff? Or given, again, what we've seen over the last few weeks, is it just better for United to be out of Europe for their league chances? What do you think?
I had the feeling that it would be better for United to be in Europe, even in Europa League, just because you've actually got pretty sizable squad still, even with all these injuries, where you got, we're talking about players that aren't being picked, you know, and how that'll probably ruffle their feathers. Well, okay, at least having another competition provides opportunity to rotate the squad and keep things fresh. Then again, if they do go out of Europe entirely, you'd think, right, this is Ten Hag's chance to actually instill some proper, you know, systems and strategies at the training ground, you know, because we aren't really seeing it right now. And I know that's the big caveat is the fact that his team is changing all the time. He's obviously a part of the team changing all the time. He's making influential decisions on some of those personnel. It's not just injuries. But I think, I don't know, my gut would always be United should be in Europe. And even if it's the second tier competition, then that's still something that they should aspire towards.
Well, I think we're all in agreement with that, to be fair, Laurie. That was me posing the question that I didn't even believe myself, to be honest, but that's what we do at times. We play a little bit of devil's advocate. Let's have a look at the team then, Andy. I mean, there was two changes, wasn't there, for the Bournemouth game from the Chelsea win. That was Martial starting instead of Højlund, and obviously the other one was enforced with Reguilón coming in for Victor Lindelof. He only missed the game with a knock, so I'm not sure whether he'll be available or not for this Bayern game, but what would you do?
Well, if Lindelof comes back, then I think he does start. I thought he played well at Everton a couple of weeks ago. I don't even think he was too bad against Chelsea. And that would mean Luke Shaw at left back. I think Luke Shaw at left back makes Manchester United significantly better than any of the other left backs there. Going forward in front of that, I'm just looking at who the players are available.
Kobbie Mainoo, maybe, over Amrabat. That, there's maybe a discussion point there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a hell of an occasion for an 18-year-old to be thrust into.
Yeah, it is. And that's one for the manager. I don't know the answer. I just think if he plays well, great. He's gone for it. But Amrabat played well against Chelsea. That was probably his best Manchester United performance. But where are the goals coming from? Then again, it's Europe, innit? We score loads of goals. Højlund gets his hat-trick and away we go.
Højlund's pretty much the top goal scorer in the Champions League. So it's not goals we have to worry about. It's letting him in at the other end. I mean, Onana needs to have a clean performance, Carl, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
We want the one who saves the last-minute penalties against Copenhagen as opposed to the one who does the other things against Galatasaray and Bayern in the first game.
Absolutely, absolutely. I would go with Kobe.
Kobe, come on, lad. Midfield.
I know. I will go with Kobe Boateng Mainoo in central midfield next to Sofyan Amrabat.
Amrabat.
Amrabat, I would go. I'll go there. I just think United need more stability in that. Okay, McTominay's in good-ish goal-scoring form, but you can't have that 5 minutes of disaster where you can see two goals.
Mm.
You need to be able to play out of pressure. And it's time to get a bit boring and a bit dour, so that would be my midfield pairing for that game.
Probably agree with Carl there. The only thing is McTominay's... I suppose if goals aren't the issue in the Champions League, we've decided that Hoyland's going to turn up.
Last 25 minutes.
Unleash Scott.
Unleash Scott. All right. We know this tactic works to an extent with him crashing the box, but I want to see it in 25-minute spurts at the end of games, not 90 minutes.
I think that's the only decision, really, isn't it, for Ten Hag? Because the front four, do you not think? I think he just... Unless he brings Rashford back, unless he thinks, big game, here comes Rashford...
That's the debate, isn't it?
But where do you, what, instead of Garnacho?
Garnacho or Antony?
Yeah, I don't think Rashford likes playing on the right. I just don't think he. I don't know. I think the things that he's asked to do in that position don't come naturally to him, and I think it then takes away from what he can do in an offensive sense. So I think if you were. But it didn't feel like, 10 minutes against Bournemouth, and again, I know he had an illness, but it didn't feel like he was being primed for a kind of big return against Bayern. So I suspect that Ten Hag will go with Garnacho again and Antony and Hoyland and Fernandes. But, to be fair, Rashford's come off the bench against the German team in Europe and scored a hat-trick. So, maybe that's part of the formula.
In Germany, he started with Palestri on the right. I got told off yesterday outside the ground for my pronunciation of Palestri, so I apologise for that. Although we did get credited for saying Kobe right, even though Carl can't say it right, even though Carl's from Ghanaian heritage.
You always say Palestri right, don't you?
Yeah, of course I do. Well, apparently not.
Facundo.
Palestri.
I
interviewed him last week, actually.
What did you call him? Frank?
Facundo, yeah, it was quite easy, that bit. His godfather is one of the most famous rock stars in Uruguay, which basically the question was, tell us something we don't know about you. And it turns out that his godfather is literally one of the most famous South American rock stars ever.
Wow.
I should look this up.
I didn't know that. What's his name?
Palestri's godfather is a guy called Sebastian Tessera, who is in a band... He's a lead singer of La Vela Puesa, which I think I've pronounced correctly.
Do you know what that means in English?
No.
The sailing pig.
Okay.
Well, if pigs might fly, then United might get through in the Champions League.
There we go. That's the spirit.
Come on.
Give us a blast then. What we listening to pre-match on Tuesday?
Well, I'm not sure. Here we go.
Soy de la ciudad con todo lo que ves, con su ruido.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's going to set quite the right tone, but we've tried, haven't we?
Yeah, we don't send them to sleep. What, win the match?
Yeah. Oh, I tried anyway.
You did.
I thought that might
Come
be
on,
a,
Reds,
a
get
good
behind
idea.
The team against Bayern. Come on,
that,
everyone.
That's more like it. That's more the spirit
Massive
that we want,
night.
Right?
Send them packing back to Bavaria with English cheeses.
Yeah, well, it's happening. There's no doubt about that. Hopefully Manchester United bring it and aren't listening to La Vela Puerca in the build-up to the match. But thank you so much, as always, for listening to Talk of the Devils. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Carl. Thank you, Laurie, as well. We'll be back. Whatever happens against Bayern, we'll be cuddled up in the press box after the game, recording together, sharing a box or a bag of Maltesers. We'll speak to you then. Take care. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Sabe valorar que de turista en la capital han sabido vagar y no han encarado al fin la cruda realidad de respirar Oshin.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.